WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen in for Terry Gross. Last year, Americans spent untold numbers of hours watching the trial of O.J. Simpson. Even before that spectacle, students at Amherst College were immersing themselves in the subject of murder. In fact, Professor Austin Sarrett's course called Murder is the most popular class ever taught on campus. Professor Sarrett dreamed up the idea not to give students an easy A, but to challenge them to think about issues like violence, capital punishment, heroism, revenge, goodness, and evil. For course readings, he used selections from the Bible and classics like Truman Capote's In Cold Blood, Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment, Shakespeare's Macbeth, and Albert Camus' The Stranger. He also draws on popular culture, on movies like Pulp Fiction, Natural Born Killers, Thelma and Louise, and Silence of the Lambs. Austin Sarrett has been teaching law and political science at Amherst since 1974. I was curious about the popularity of Sarrett's course and asked him to explain America's fascination with murder.
The fascination with murder is not just American. It's as old as the Old Testament, as old as Greek tragedy. You can't pick up any Shakespeare play or any Russian novel without reading about murder. I think that some of that fascination actually has to do with a fascination with the subject of death. Death, of course, is the one event in our lives that we can't experience. When we read about murder, when we watch murder, in some sense we are living our own demise vicariously. We identify with the victims, and that precipitates a kind of curiosity, a fearful curiosity, but a curiosity. We also may, in some cases, identify with the murderer. To murder is to take the ultimate power over someone's life into your hands. And in that sense, people may be fascinated with the power that murderers exercise and the power that murderers wield. And finally, increasingly in the United States, because of the prevalence of violence in our culture, to study murder is to get a sad but accurate window on many things that are going on in American society.
Your course begins with the Bible, with Genesis, the story of Abraham and Isaac. Why do you begin there?
Well, I actually use the story of Abraham and Isaac to ask my students to think about the difference between killing and murder. Students come into the course thinking that every killing is a murder. And I begin with the story of Abraham and Isaac because, as you know, it's a killing that didn't happen. I ask my students in the first class, what would have happened if the angel that the Lord sent to Abraham had been delayed in traffic or had gotten lost and Abraham had done the deed? I ask them whether that would have been a killing or whether it would have been a murder. And from there, we talk about the various ways in which murder can be defined as an unjustifiable killing or as an unauthorized killing. Beginning with Abraham and Isaac, of course, takes them to a place in which they are familiar, and it allows me to begin this strategy of unpacking the complexity of a subject to which they may feel great familiarity.
Well, let me read another chapter in your course, Why Study Murder. And you have your students read A Week in the Death of America from Newsweek, 1994. You look at the film Menace to Society. You read the Marquis de Sade, Philosophy in the Bedroom. Michel Foucault, I, Pierre Riviere, Having Slaughtered My Mother, My Sister, and My Brother. Read Joel Black, The Aesthetics of Murder. Wendy Lesser, her book called Pictures at an Execution. Another film called Geraldo, Killing Abortionists, and another reading from Samuel Pillsbury called Evil and the Law of Murder. Again, what do you want to challenge your students to do in bringing these disparate pieces of both literature and pop culture together?
We begin with this Newsweek piece because what Newsweek attempted to do was to tell the story of the mundane quality of murder in the United States. Murder in the United States is frequent. It's too frequent, but it's hardly mundane. The Newsweek piece and the film Menace to Society helps us to locate the subject of murder in social relations in the United States. They help us to locate the subject of murder in the lives of some more than in the lives of others. Moving from that introduction to murder in American society, to the Marquis de Sade, to Foucault, to Joel Black, I'm asking students to think about the way in which murder becomes a theme in moral philosophy and the way that some philosophies have developed in opposition to the moralization of murder. And by the time we get to the episode of Geraldo, I'm asking them to think about the way in which murder is commodified and presented to us as a theme in popular entertainment.
Do you understand the impulse to commit murder? Have you ever felt murderous rages yourself?
I think I should plead the Fifth Amendment in response to that question.
Well, just even a fantasy.
Well, what I ask my students to think about Freud and the way in which Freud's theories are built upon an image of the pervasiveness of the idea of killing. The notion of the Oedipus complex is built on the fantasy of killing the father. I can't say that those fantasies are ever far away from anybody's life, but I can't say that they're ever something that preoccupies me or anyone else.
Well, for myself, as I was thinking about this, the only time I can really entertain those murderous rages is when I'm in my car. I mean, this is not about Freud, I don't think, or great existential ideas. It's about someone cutting me off on the highway or someone taking the parking space that I had seen as I was driving down a particular street. And that's when I feel a kind of murderous rage. But again, I don't think these are very lofty emotions on my part.
No, I just hope I'm not on the highway with you when you have such rages.
Or just don't cut me off.
It is the case that the line between anger and what you've called a murderous rage is for many of us, at least imaginatively, a thin one. But I do think that it's important not to fall into the idea that because we all at one time or another have entertained, I could kill him, that we all participate in the psychology of the murderer. It's a long step from that imagining to the deed itself.
Well, from your study and even from classroom discussions, do you sometimes wonder why there isn't more murder?
No, I actually wonder why there is so much murder. You know, in the United States, now every year more than 20,000 people will be murdered. And while there have been recent declines in the murder rates in major American cities, that's still an enormous toll in human life. It says something about American society that we are such a violent society. You know, in other cultures, people have murderous rages, probably as much as we do. But in other cultures, the translation from the murderous rage to the act itself seems to be much less frequent. So, yes, I do understand why people kill, but I think I'm as intrigued by the question of why there is so much killing as why there isn't more.
Do you see a connection between the level of violence in this country and the amount of freedoms that we have?
Yes, I do. I believe that the level of violence in this society is in part, and I emphasize in part, a function exactly of the freedom that we have. The freer a society, and this is in many ways the freest of any society, the freer of a society, the more room there is going to be for uncivil behavior, for indecent behavior, and for aggressive behavior. And all of us, in our desire to avoid the pain and reduce the suffering and carnage associated with murder, have to walk a very fine line in finding public policy solutions and finding appropriate responses that don't lead us to limit freedom in the name of civility as a way of reducing the cost to our society of murder. I ask my students often to contemplate the ways in which murder is entangled with things in our lives that we prize and admire. I ask them to think about murder as a response to a sense of justice. I ask them to think about murder as a response to offended honor. I ask them to think about murder as a response to passion gone bad. So it may very well be that this killing, this aggressive violence, is so entangled with what makes us human and so entangled with the privileges that we have in the United States to give vent to all parts of our humanity, that it will be very difficult to reduce the murder rate dramatically without losing things that we value.
My guest on Fresh Air today is Austin Sarrett, and we're talking about a course that he teaches at Amherst College called Murder, and it looks at murder through literature, through the law, and in popular culture. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Professor Austin Sarrett, and we're talking about a course that he teaches at Amherst College called Murder. Let me get your reaction to the debate today. It's actually a fairly ongoing debate about violence on television and certainly by extension violence in the movies. The critics of violence in both those medium, of course, blame that violence for the violence that we see in society. What's your response to the level of discourse on this topic?
Well, in some ways I regret it. I think it is the case that the amount of violence shown on television and in film can have the effect of desensitizing all of us. But I think that the sources of violence in the society cannot reasonably be traced to the representation of violence in popular culture. And I sometimes think that the conversation about violence on television is a substitute for a much more difficult conversation about the way in which American society is structured so as to encourage violence and the very difficult public policy questions which one would have to deal with if one were going to meaningfully intervene to reduce the levels of violence in the society. When I hear Bob Dole or Bill Clinton railing against violence on television, I certainly recognize what it is that they're talking about, but I also worry that that's a substitute for another kind of conversation which we all too rarely have.
You mentioned the fact that there is a danger of violent images and the overexposure to violent images or to murder on television or in the movies, that it could have a desensitizing effect. Could it also have a sensitizing effect? You had mentioned earlier about the prevalence of murder through literature and through popular culture as a way of vicariously experiencing our own death, a way of voyeuristically trying on what it would mean, what it would feel like to be a murderer. Can you say even the prevalence of this kind of stuff, murder and violence, is just our obsession with trying to figure out what this is all about and having the tools to do so?
That may very well be, but frankly, the images that I see on television and the images that I see on the film rarely, it seems to me, are intelligently enough done to invite that. The murder is quick and clean. The murders come fast and furious. In either case, it seems to me we're hardly presented with an image that invites us to contemplate these deeper and more basic questions. Often the murder is simply an excuse to focus in on the investigative dilemmas or the personal anxieties of the heroic private investigator or the misunderstood and underpaid urban policeman. So in that sense, sometimes these images are presented in quite a casual way and in a way which allows us to think that murder isn't messy that murder isn't ugly, that murder isn't shattering to the lives of the people left behind.
Do you think killing is getting more complicated? And by that, I mean, we certainly have death penalties being carried out in states across the country. The idea of physician-assisted suicide is looks like it's gathering more support, the recent acquittal of Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Do you see a kind of layer of complexity when talking about killing and murder based on what's happening in society?
Sure. I think that if we were to talk, for example, just for a minute about the law of murder, the law of murder is quite complex, and in some sense it's quite expansive. The prohibition of assisted suicide, which until quite recently was firmly in place, represented the use of the idea of murder to try to punish or to try to inhibit people from helping people to escape dramatic pain and suffering. The use of the law of murder in instances like what is called the felony murder rule, in which someone is actually prosecuted as a murderer even though they were simply driving the getaway car for a robbery at a 7-Eleven that went bad, represents an expansive use of the idea of murder. We've always had to face the distinction between killing and murder. What a soldier does in war may have the same physical consequence of what someone does on the street when they shoot someone, but it's not the same act. And so the complexity of figuring out what is the difference between killing and murder, I think, is one that's always been with us. I do think that you're right to raise the question of capital punishment. Here, I think that the choice of the state to kill complicates the efforts of the state to deter killing. That the state itself is in the business of executing people who it has firmly in its custody, who no longer represent a danger to anyone, raises the issue about whether or not killing is not an appropriate vehicle for dealing with damaged honor, for offense and slight. And while I know that there are important distinctions that can be drawn between capital punishment and murder, drawing those distinctions is obviously more difficult when the society indulges itself in its own desires to kill.
What part of your course on murder, and there are a lot of subsections, sections that you really want to get your students to think about and be challenged by, what aspect of this course has gotten the most reaction, the most heated discussions going on in your class?
Well, actually, a couple of things, some of it surprised me. I teach in the course Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. And when I first taught it, I did it with a little doubt that this book would grip my students' attention. But it did, and it has. It's generated a lot of conversation about the way in which, as you know, in Cold Blood, innocent people are killed in a senseless way. It's generated a lot of conversation about the senselessness of killing. That book also ends with a very long and, I think, careful discussion of the legal process through which we deal with murderers. And it culminates in the execution of the main characters, Dick and Perry. And that book generated an awful lot of conversation focused on the morality of the death penalty. I've recently finished talking about assisted suicide. And that, too, generated, I think, not surprisingly, a lot of conversation. The conversation focused around the question of whether or not assisted suicide should be limited to people who are in pain and who are at the end of their lives. Some students believe that it should. Others believed that the right to take one's own life is a right that is located in a value of autonomy, and that Kevorkian's claim that he was just helping to alleviate pain underplays the right to suicide and the right to have someone help. You know, in the future, on the this semester, we'll take on the subject of serial killing and the subject of genocide. And I'll ask my students to think about what is the moral wrong of serial killing and what is the moral wrong of genocide. Is it simply a mathematics problem? Is the person who kills 5 or 10 or 20 or 20,000 or 6 million simply 5 or 10 or 20 or 20,000 or 6 million times worse than the person who kills one? And that subject will no doubt this year, as it did last year, elicit heated argument and heated conversation.
Well, Austin Sarrat, thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Well, thank you.
Austin Sarrat is a professor at Amherst College. His course, Murder, is the most popular in the college's history. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.